glad to be here with you, and I'm so excited about the things that God is doing in your community. And in fact, I think it speaks volumes about who you are and your heart that this morning when we got here, I have two daughters. One is 6 years old, and she had been here about 15 minutes this morning, and she said, I already feel so welcomed. So thank you for loving on her this morning. And thank you for inviting me to come and share our story. I love a good story. Who loves a good story? All right, good, good. So I love to hear stories. I love to watch stories. I love to tell stories. I love a good story. What are some of your favorite stories? Anybody? Don't be shy. And it doesn't have to be a Bible story. We're in church, but you know, we know other stories too. What are some of your favorite stories? Alice in Wonderland, a great adventure story. What are some of your other favorite stories? What is it? Oh, okay, the tortoise and the hare, right? I love that story. That's a good one, a classic fable. It has a great message about what we're talking about this morning as well. Any other favorite stories or favorite movies back there? Oh, The Master's Hand About the Violin. That is a great story. We love epic stories, right? Like, you know, something like The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings or Star Wars. Or we love a sports story sometimes, like Rudy or Remember the Titans. There's so many great stories. And this morning, I want to share with you a couple of stories. And the first one has to do with this trash bag over here in the corner. Now, just in case you thought that the janitor forgot to pick up the trash this week. This is actually mine. And this trash bag actually taught me a great lesson. Actually, this is a replica of the original trash bag. But I learned a huge lesson back in 2012 from a trash bag. I'd had an incredibly long day. I came home to see a trash bag. It was white like this one, slumped on my front step. I kind of knew what was inside of it, but I had no idea what God was about to teach me through a trash bag. And I had no idea that its contents would reveal so much about my heart and my faith and about who God was and how much He cared about me. And so this trash bag this morning, we're going to talk about what God has to teach us about stuff through a trash bag this morning. But before I get there, I thought I would do a little bit of an introduction. And as you were told at the beginning, my name is Sherry Lowe. I have an alter ego, the Queen of Free, and I do appear locally here on Sunday mornings on WTHR. I write an article for the Daily Journal, and I blog online at queenoffree.net, and I've been doing that since 2008. But I am also a stuffaholic, a recovering one at least. I really like stuff. And God has taught me a lot of lessons through my stuff. And I think He has some lessons to teach you as well. But back in 2008, my family, and I think we have a photo of our family. This is our family, my husband Brian, my daughter Anna, who's a seventh grader at Greenwood Middle School, and then my daughter Zoe, who felt so welcomed this morning and already told us that she'd made lots of new best friends during the first service. We started an adventure way back in 2008, so we didn't look quite like this. We all looked a little bit younger. But back in 2008, God really began to talk to our hearts and help us to realize that we had a problem in our finances. We had over $100,000 in debt. And that was a little bit daunting, and it was keeping us from God's plan for our life. It was keeping us from being able to achieve dreams that we had. And it was holding us back from being as generous as we wanted to be. And it was keeping us from providing a future for our children. And so back in 2008, probably at the worst time possible, God yanked on our hearts and said, you need to get a hold of this and you need to do something different. Because we had no plan for our finances at all. Our plan was not having a plan. And it was probably the worst time we could have chosen to get out of debt, because the little six-year-old girl at the time was a baby, or she was just about to be born when we decided to do this. And honestly, how many of you have had a baby recently? like a little bitty baby. There was like a little teeny baby on the front row during the first service. When you have a new baby, they're so wonderful, right? They're so full of life, and they're so cute and cuddly, and everybody wants to hold them. But you know what else babies are? They're expensive, like really expensive. And so not only do you have the cost of delivery, but you have diapers and you have, you know, baby food. They have to ride in something special and they have to sleep in something special. So it probably wasn't a good idea for us to start paying off debt then, because we had a lot of expenses that were new and coming at us left and right. But honestly, can I share a secret with you? There is no good time to begin paying off debt. There is only today. And so you will always have another expense, you'll have a crisis, your car will blow up, your kid will need braces, something will happen. There is no good time to begin paying off debt. There is only today. And so with that in mind, we dove into this journey of paying off debt. I think we even have a picture of us from the hospital when Zoe was first born. There it is. I love using this picture with young moms because this was the good picture that I took after I put on makeup, and I really still look like I need a latte. Like this is pretty worn out lady, right? So we began this journey and it was a great adventure. And when I say great adventure, when we first started, it was great as in very daunting, very, very depressing in some ways because we knew our life had to change a lot and that was uncomfortable. And yet on the other side of this journey, I can tell you that it was a great adventure because God showed up and surprised us in ways that knocked our socks off. And he answered prayers we didn't even utter. And he taught us things we never even knew that we needed to learn. So it was this great and amazing journey. Now, when we began the process of paying off our debt, the first thing that we did was to save up a very small emergency fund of about $1,000. And then after that, we adjusted my husband's withholdings on his check. So we had about an extra $100 per month to be able to put toward debt. And we knew that meant that we would not get a refund in the spring, but at least it was $100 we weren't living on right then that we could put toward the process. And we lined up our debts from the smallest to the largest, and off we went with the first one being the smallest and attacked it. Now, if this plan sounds at all familiar to you, you might know the guy in the next picture, and that is Dave Ramsey. And Dave's plan is, I see like a Ramsey head out there, he's excited. So Dave Ramsey is an author, he's a speaker, he's a radio broadcaster. You can catch him locally here on 95.9 Monday through Friday. He's great wisdom when it comes to personal finance, and our lives were forever changed both in quality and direction because of his teaching. That being said, we also got in there and made Dave's plan our own. We refused to just accept somebody else's philosophy and lived it because Dave Ramsey doesn't live in our house. We listen to him on the radio and we think he's awesome, but he doesn't live in our house. He doesn't know what it looks like day to day to fix dinner in my kitchen. And so I began to really think, what are the things that we can do to really buy into this process of paying off debt? And it involved all kinds of sacrifices, it all involved all kinds of changes, and it involved all kinds of different choices that we made along the way. But you know, we thought it would take us 15 years to pay off that mountain of debt that we had. 7.5 if we really hustled, if we hit it hard and did everything we could. And I am so glad that God is much better at math than we were, because in just under 4 years, that behemoth of debt, all $127,482.30, was gone. That was a miracle, you know? It really was. And the way that that happened was obviously a hard work and a lot of choices to make changes in our lives, but we also took this philosophy on that we wanted to battle this debt as an enemy. And if you want victory over debt, you must make your battle personal. Now let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. We can make statements like, you know, debt wants to destroy your marriage, because we know from research that one of the number one reasons why people get divorced is because of fights over money and a misunderstanding over money. But we could also say, you know, debt wants to keep you from sending your kids to college, providing a future for them. We could say debt wants to limit how generous you are. Debt wants to, you know, attack your health because you're worried and stressed about money. We could say all of those things, but it feels kind of neutral, right? Debt, what is that? Who is that? But if we went back in and replaced the word debt every time with the name Fred Johnson, and we said, Fred Johnson wants to destroy your marriage. Fred Johnson wants to decide whether or not you can afford to send your kids to college. Fred Johnson wants to, you know, make your health poor. Fred Johnson wants to tell you, no, you can't give to that person in need. That makes us angry, right? Because that's a person. That's an apologies to Fred Johnson, if there are any Fred Johnsons here today. Just an example. I love all Fred Johnsons. But that makes us frustrated, right? Who's Fred Johnson? What is his business being here telling me what I can do with my money and what I can't do with my money? But when we make the battle against debt personal like that, it stings a little bit, and it gets us a little bit angry, and it gets us the motivation that we need to actually succeed. So what we did was we envisioned our debt as a dragon. Because I was the queen of free, we thought, hey, it's kind of fun to live in a fairy tale, and we were going to battle this dragon together. And we did all kinds of crazy things, like we wrote letters to the dragon. We told the dragon, you are not welcome in our house. You are not welcome in our marriage. We really fought together as a married couple against that dragon instead of fighting each other about money. And that helped us a lot. And in fact, I've written a book. This is not out yet on the shelves, but it will be in January, called Slaying the Debt Dragon, which is all about our journey of paying off debt. It has the specifics of the plan that we used, and as well as some practical tips, everything from how to make your own laundry detergent to what does it look like to throw your kid a birthday party while you're paying off debt. Some down-to-earth, rubber-meets-the-road sort of ideas to pay off debt, as well as our personal story. But I wanted to share a second story with you this morning, and that comes from the book of 2 Kings in the 4th chapter. And this is a story that is all about debt. So if you thought that the Bible was boring or just filled with information, especially Old Testament, that you didn't really need or it wasn't very practical, that's the furthest thing from the truth. This story is about Elisha and the widow's oil, and it comes from 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 1 through 7, and I'm actually reading from the Message this morning, which is a transliteration. It just makes it a little more story form. It'll be up on the side screens, but you're welcome to follow along with me as well. So this is how this story begins. One day, the wife of a man from the Guild of Prophets called out to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead. You well know what a good man he was, devoted to God. And now the man to whom he was in debt is on his way to collect by taking my two children as slaves." So let's just stop right there. If you think you have a lot of debt, no one's coming to take your children, right? This lady had a lot of debt. And in fact, a lot of biblical scholars tell us that this woman was probably the wife of Obadiah, who's in the Old Testament. It's a prophet of God. And she went from living a lifestyle that was very, very affluent. She had all of her needs provided for. And now her husband has passed away, and she is so dirt poor that someone is coming to take her most precious possession, which is her children. And so I am sure that she is panicked, because also women at this time were not able to have any source of income or employment. They really weren't even able to own property. And so this is a terrifying position for this woman who is in debt to be in. The story continues with Elisha, and he says, "I wonder how I can be of help. Tell me, what do you have in your house?" "Nothing," she said. "Well, I do have a little oil." Now, here's what I find absolutely fascinating about this story. Elisha's a very powerful prophet. He could have done almost anything for this woman. He could have said, "God, please send the resources for this woman." He could have said to this woman, "I'll pray for you." He was probably a man of influence, so he could have said to the debt collector, "Back off, buddy. This is not your business, right? But this is what he chooses to do instead. He chooses to ask her this question, tell me, what do you have in your house? And her answer fascinates me. And I think even though it was very, very ancient, really speaks to our lives today. And she responded with nothing. Now, I'm not sure about you, but this is something I have said before in my house when someone has asked me the question, what do we have to eat in this whole house? And I have said, nothing. Right? But that's not a true statement, is it? For the majority of us, we have something to eat. Now, you may be eating something kind of weird like spaghetti with, you know, ketchup or something, but you probably have something. There's not nothing to eat in this whole house, right? We all have something. We all have the clothes we have on this morning. We all have something. And then she responds with, well, I do have a little oil. And in my head, I hear her dragging out that word, well. Well, I do have a little bit of oil. And she's kind of underestimating what God has given her, isn't she? She's diminishing it just a little bit. And I think there's a huge temptation for all of us to do that when it comes to stuff. We say, well, I have a little bit. I don't have the newest car, but well, I have, you know, my grandma's old car. We diminish God's good gifts, we diminish his blessings, and we just kind of make them smaller than what they are. And oil back then wasn't just something that, you know, you dipped your bread in. Oil was medicine, oil was lotion, oil was part of the economy, oil was used in worship, oil was very, very valuable. So even a small bit was really, really important and could be used. And I love the idea that God, through Elisha, uses something that this lady already has to make a miracle. It's not something outside of that. He uses something she already has. So here's how the story continues. Here's what you do, said Elisha. Go up and down the street and borrow jugs and bowls from all of your neighbors, and not just a few, all you can get. Then come home, lock the door behind you, you and your sons, pour oil into each container. When each is full, set it aside. And so can you imagine, I'm a mom, so I probably would have sent my kids out down the street. They probably were knocking on the neighbor's doors. We need bowls, we need jugs, we need vases, we need vats, whatever you've got, give it to me. And so probably some of them were big and some of them were small and some of them were fancy and some of them were plain, very practical. And they bring all these things home, and then the instructions for her to lock the door behind them are really kind of unique, because this was a miracle God wanted to perform in their midst for his glory, but it was going to be a private thing. It was going to be a private battle. And so I find that kind of fascinating. And as the story continues, she did what he said. She locked the door behind her and her sons. As they brought the containers to her, she filled them. When all the jugs and bowls were full, she said to one of her sons, another jug, please. He said, that's it. There are no more jugs. And then the oil stopped. And here's what I love. You know, God could have done all kinds of things in the midst of this. He could have filled that house with so much oil that they could have done the backstroke in it, right? But he provided their needs up to provided what they needed, and then it was over. It finished. It wasn't like he wanted her to start some sort of miracle working show where everybody paid for tickets and came in and watched that oil multiply. It was that he wanted to provide what she needed, and that was it. And that was good enough. And when he had done that, the oil stopped. As the story continues, she goes back to Elisha. She went and told the story to the man of God, and he said, go sell the oil, make good on your debts, live, both you and your sons, on what is left. And I find, you know, this entire story so relatable to each and every one of our journeys. God wants to do a miracle with your stuff. I'm positive of that. And he wants us to be good managers of that and to live on what he has given us. I'm sure this woman must have felt all kinds of fear. Because let's face it, that was a really weird thing to do, right? To get all of those things gathered up, to believe that she would keep pouring and it would keep coming. That was weird, unusual. It must have been terrifying for her to be without her husband to begin with, that void that I'm certain she felt, that loneliness, to be threatened to have her children taken away. There was a whole lot of fear in that moment for her. And honestly, there was a whole lot of fear for us at the beginning of our story too. But you have to ask yourself if freedom has more value in your life than fear. Because when we allow fear to paralyze us to the point of never beginning something, even if it's something very difficult, then we worship that fear more than we worship the God who provides freedom. And so for us, we came to this question of how much do we value freedom? How much do we value fear? And away we went. It was not a short journey. It's easy for me to stand up here and it feel like it went by in a blip. But one of us went from being an infant to being able to walk and talk and even read. And we all grew a little bit during that time. And on March 28th, 2012, we actually made our final payment to Sallie Mae online so that we could share that with those that we loved. And we took this picture, kind of snapped impromptu, and I'm certain we could not recreate it even if we tried, because our faces speak volumes about what we felt in that moment of no longer being beholden to debt. And it was not always the most fun of adventures, but it was awesome, which kind of brings us back to the white trash bag where we started. So this trash bag, or one just like it, sat on my front step, and when I came home, I knew what was in it. It was some clothes. There was a lady who I had just met who had said to me, you know what, my daughter is just a little bit bigger than your daughter, and we have some hand-me-downs, and I would love to share those clothes with you. And I love this idea. I love hand-me-downs anyway. And it was a blessing, and I knew that those things were inside. But she had also added very quickly after she told me that, there are also some things inside of the bag for you. Now, at this point in our journey, I spent almost nothing on clothes for nearly 4 years. So what I had left was pretty shabby looking, and mainly it was like yoga pants and running shorts and t-shirts. That's about the sum of my wardrobe. And while I was thankful at the idea of having some new items in my wardrobe, when someone gives you clothes for your children, it's a great blessing. When someone gives you clothes for you, it feels a little humbling sometimes. And also, the lady, who was very, very sweet and very, very kind, was about 10 years older than me and not the same body shape. And so I thought, oh, great, thank you so much. You know, I'm sure this is something I will love. And I sat down on the floor and I began to dig through the bag, and I was sorting things like you do, you know, too big, too small, not the right color, that sort of thing, and moving things around on the floor. And I picked up an item of clothing that was meant for me, and I began to weep because I was asking God throughout the end of our journey, are you still there? Do you still care? Do you know what it's like to struggle? And I wasn't sure I was hearing his voice, and even though we had seen him do so much, we were almost finished with paying off all that debt. I was still struggling with where he was at in that story, if he really cared about my most basic of needs or not, and if what we were doing was going to make a difference. And I picked up an article of clothing that was intended for me. It was brand new. It had tags on it. It was a name brand. I never would have bought myself a name brand. I still very rarely buy anything that's name brand. And I began to weep because I knew he did care. You see, in the church, a lot of the times we think that God doesn't care about stuff. And it's true that pursuing him is much more important and worshiping him is much more important than pursuing stuff. But God still cares about you to bless you with stuff. And the question is, will we worship the stuff or the God who provides the stuff? And will we use the stuff for his glory, or will we become slaves to the stuff? And God knew that I needed to hear from him from a white trash bag that day. And all of his glory just jumped right out of that bag. And he said, I care about you. I care about even your stuff. And that was such a huge blessing for me. Now, I'd love to tell you, like, from that day forward, it was all roses and sunshine, and I never struggled again with stuff or wanting stuff. But like I said, I'm recovering, not a ex-stuffaholic. And honestly, I still pray to be delivered from debt every single day. I still pray that God would release me from the desires of wanting more, for wanting something that someone else has. I still pray every single day. And I'm so excited for you as you begin the next few weeks with Pastor Wayne, diving into learning how to become good managers of our stuff and learning how to really speak to the world and be different with the way that you approach stuff, because people will see that in your life. They will see that you're different and they'll wonder why. Now, in the next few weeks, I'm going to have some videos that are more practical, things like meal planning and how to begin budgeting and signs that you're about ready to make a decision that you'll regret. And those will be in short video form. You'll see those each week. And hopefully that will provide you some practical knowledge in combination with some of the things that I shared from my heart this morning. You can connect with me online. I do have the book coming out in January, but you can pre-order it already on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Family Christian, those types of sites. You can find me at queenoffree.net. I actually send out a newsletter just about every day with ideas and practical ways to save as well as freebies. I'm a social media junkie. And so you can find me on Facebook, Pinterest, and Twitter, as well as Instagram. You just use the site and then /thequeenoffree, and you will find me there. And you can also reach out to me via the website, fill out a contact form, ask a question. But I think, Pastor Tim, if you're ready, we'll dive into some of those questions this morning that people may have.
Sherry, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. We're grateful for that so much. So if you have questions right now that you would like to ask Sherry, we're going to ask you, if you would, just tweet those right now. Again, the handle is @TheGraceAG and #SlayDebt, all right? While those are coming in, I do have a quick question for you.
Sure.
Sherry, you know, so oftentimes when we talk about money at church, sometimes it gets a little uncomfortable
yeah.
or whatever, but especially the enemy is such a master at making us feel condemned if we haven't done well in the past.
Right.
And so it paralyzes us to never really start.
Right.
And so you talked about that in the beginning and back in 2008 and during that transition time. What are some things maybe that we can do to help us to work through that
and
to get past
it.
That, you know, really just pull the trigger?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the lies that we believed in the very beginning of our journey was that we were the only ones. Because I think we come to church a lot of the times and we might hear about managing money and we look around the room and we think everybody else has got their act together. I'm the only one who's struggling with this. And we believe that darkness, we believe that lie. Probably one of the first things that we did was to ask for forgiveness from each other, from God, to just be released from that guilt. The second thing that we did was we drug that darkness out into the light, and it lost its power over us. And so for us, that looked like telling people that we trusted to begin with, hey, here's where we're at. This is where we're going. And those people were in our small group. I know you guys are passionate about small groups too. And then we began to broadcast that message more widely, and I shared it online. And the more I shared the message of, here's where we're at, here's where by God's grace we're going, the more people spoke up, some that I even knew, who said, me too. I'm not the only one. And so there's so much power in moving beyond that guilt through sharing your story. It's essential.
Excellent. All right, well, we're going to take some questions from the congregation here on Twitter. So Dave's going to throw that first one up for us.
Oh, good.
This one's from Favored Princess. I like that.
That's good. It fits the royalty.
Pretty good. Yeah, there you go. Did your debt include your mortgage? Tell us about that.
That is a great question. Yeah. So our debt was comprised of a lot of different things. We currently do still have our mortgage. We probably have, if we took it to the maximum length, 10 years left on our mortgage, but I think it will be gone much sooner than that.
Great.
But it was primarily medical debt, along with car debt, student loan debt, was the biggest component of it. And we had about $16,500 in credit card debt. So lots of little pieces. We bought furniture on a payment plan. Lots of things were rolled into that $127,000 number. But our mortgage is way less than what that is. And so I'm like, that's nothing compared to what God's already done.
Right. Terrific. All right. Good one. All right. Let's throw up the next one there if we can. Dave. All right. This one's from Orange Girl, 1855. At the Grace AG, what was your strategy to save $1,000?
This is a great question. So we did all kinds of crazy things. I'm talking about we dug through the car and found change in the car. We sold a few things, nothing big. We didn't have a diamond mine in the backyard. We didn't have an extra yacht laying around or something. Right. We, you know, literally looked all the way through our house and said, what can we get rid of? What is there that we can get rid of? We used birthday money. We used all kinds of sources of money to put toward that first little $1,000 chunk that we saved. And it's so important because it's not a question of if something bad will happen, but when. And many, many times we would drain that whole $1,000 out. You know, we had a car blow up or we had a water heater go out, and then we would build it back up again so that it would be there as a safety net during our whole journey.
Right. Good. Excellent. All right, let's take a look at the next one up there. It says, what is the best way to pay off student loans?
Yeah. Everybody hates Sallie Mae, right? Poor Sallie Mae. I'm not a fan of Sallie Mae either. Right. So student loans are big and ugly, and a lot of the times people will say, well, that's good debt. You need that kind of debt. Well, not true, because when I really evaluated our student loan debt, if we had taken it to term, we would have paid twice what we borrowed. That's crazy. And it's very easy to just see that payment amount and let it roll out and think, oh, no big deal. But you know, you're going to end up spending way more in the long run. Honestly, the best way for us was to line things up from smallest to largest so that we had some extra room at the end to whack away at that. And so when we paid off that smaller debt, we'd roll that up into the next debt, and we would have that much money already built in that we could do at the next one, and it gains momentum over time. So we saved our student loan debt until the very, very end because it was the largest amount that we had. And by then, we had paid off all of these other smaller debts first, and that helped us really attack it vehemently. So I think, you know, being sure you're using a strategy to get rid of some of the smaller things first so that you can attack it at the end with the most force.
Good. All right, let's take a look at the next question then. How do you pay off debt if you have no extra money after budgeting for essentials?
This is tricky, right? So this is where you have to get very, very nitpicky with what you consider an essential and what's not an essential. Right. And so there's all sorts of things that we did to like put it on the chopping block, and whether that meant, okay, you know what, I'm going to make my own laundry detergent now because that's much, much more cost effective than me buying the brand name at the store, or that meant I'm not going to shop at Meijer anymore. I'm only going to shop at Aldi because the food is so much more affordable there. Also, you know, things like meal planning really helped us because while we had plenty, I wasn't always using everything before it expired. Being very, very intentional is probably the best way to begin the budgeting process and saying, all right, the cable's got to go. You know, if we've got cable, that's out first. And honestly, I carried a dumb phone the entire time. I did not have a smartphone. I just got a smartphone this year. It's like the biggest new exciting thing for me. So, you know, really looking at your lifestyle and saying, is it really essential? Which is hard, right? Because all of us feel like we're already doing everything we can. But if you come in with the mindset of, I'm already doing everything I can, you'll never find a solution.
Right. Excellent. All right, we have time for a couple more. So we'll take another one there. It says, how did you teach and include your kids in the process? Great question. It's a good one.
Great question. I love my kids. There's a whole chapter in the book about money and kids because I think it's so, so important to explain to them what you're doing and why. And you use age-appropriate terms with them so you don't scare them to death. But let me tell you something about your kids. They're really, really smart. I already know this because they have smart parents who are here to learn this morning. And so whether or not you talk to your kids about money, if you have money problems, they already know. And they have seen you mumble at your spouse, "Why did you buy that?" Or they have heard you argue. And this creates what I call the monster under the bed syndrome, where they can really blow your financial situation out of proportion, like, "Oh my word, our house is gonna be gone tomorrow, you know, and we're gonna have to eat dirt from the backyard," or whatever. So explain to your kids in an age-appropriate ways what's going on, and then set some small milestones that help them celebrate with you when you achieve a goal. So maybe when you pay off your smallest debt, you're going to go out to dinner for the first time in a really long time, and you let them choose where you're going to go. Yeah. Granted, it may not be as fun for you as it is for them when they choose, but one of the things that we did was when we paid off the credit card loan, we decided we had not taken a vacation at all beyond riding the couch at grandma's house. That was it. And so we decided we were going to go to Great Wolf Lodge and celebrate. It's like a big water park indoor near Kings Island. And I can remember very vividly being with my daughter Anna, who was about second grade-ish at the time. And we were in Target and we were in this long journey of paying off all this debt. And she had something she wanted. And I don't even remember what it was. But she pulled it off the shelf and she said, "I really want it. Mom, I really want it. But I want to go to Great Wolf Lodge more." And she put it back on the shelf. Good. And I was like, yes! You know, she gets it. She understands that we're fighting for a bigger goal here. So definitely by including them, talking about money, talking about money words a lot. Anna came home from fourth or fifth grade and said, "I was the only person in my class who knew what a mortgage was, Mom." And she was just like shocked. So, you know, they don't know those things. They don't know the difference between debit and debt. That's a big one. Yes. Just talking about how much stuff costs and including them in the process.
Right. Yeah, I remember my kids saying, "Hey, just write a check. You still have checks. You know, just write another one.
That means
you
there's know, money. Or just go to the ATM.
Right. Right.
It just spits that money out.
No problem. All right, let's take a look at the next question here from the congregation. As it comes up, how do you balance a busy life with not spending money on fast food or other quick fixes? Yeah, so lifestyle.
Yeah,
what about us,
I mean, it's crazy. And I'm a working mom, and I totally get this question a lot because I don't just stand at home and chop vegetables all day. You know, I don't have time to do that. I would love to, but I don't. And so, you know, definitely that planning sort of component is very, very important with the busy lifestyle. And sometimes that means that when I plan a meal, I actually plan that we're going to eat out, rather than getting in the jam of, "What do you want? I don't care. What do you want?" And we play that game where we argue back and forth, and then we end up eating something neither one of us wanted, right? So we can actually look forward to dining out, either on nights when we have time or nights when we know we're going to be pinched, and we choose where we're going to go. I might even get online and look at the menu before we go to choose what I'm going to have, and it becomes something you look forward to, rather than something you're under the gun and under the pressure. And having that meal plan in place as well will help you to think through your week. So you don't want to fix a meal on Thursday night when you know that you know, you're going to be really, really busy. You want to have a pizza you can throw in the oven. So sure. Thinking ahead is very, very important so that you don't get overwhelmed and be hurrying, scurrying around.
Excellent. All right, I think we have one more question.
Okay.
Before we finish up, so we'll go ahead and take that one. This is, what was your final breakthrough and your motivation to start the journey?
This is a great question. So and it's a moment of humility for me. Brian, my husband, actually began casting the vision for us to get out of debt about 2 years before we started. And I thought, you know, I like the idea. Nobody says, "Oh, I want to have $100,000 worth of debt." Nobody loves that. But I just couldn't see how it was possible because I did things like buy the groceries, make sure the kids had shoes, you know, pay the bills, those sorts of things. And I really kind of with that same question, like, we're doing everything we can. And probably what spoke the most to me was when Brian put away the credit card and he said, "I'm not using it anymore." And it really made me kind of step back and think, okay, he's really willing to make this sacrifice. What am I willing to do and where am I at?
Yeah.
in this story. And then honestly, having another child, I think will do that to you as well, where you begin to consider, we need to, you know, provide for another person in our household. How are we going to do that? And we're already stretched so thin. So probably both of those moments really flipped a switch on in my brain and began to motivate me toward. But I'll be honest that in the early days, it was a fake it till you make it sort of thing. Right. Where we were doing these things. It wasn't always fun. I wasn't always like skipping down the street excited to be, you know, reducing our lifestyle. But as we kind of gained momentum and as the journey continued, I really enjoyed living simply and realizing we didn't need as much as I thought we had needed.
Right. Excellent. All right. Well, you tell Sherry thank you, how much we appreciate all that she's doing. Thank you so much. Appreciate that.